episode 149 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded September 14th, 2017, Atlantis. Atlantis? Les, where does this name come from?
Well, it's because all of these shows are about space.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So do I need to go back and change the title?
No, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
So why space then?
Well, we're going to talk about You're the Worst, where the two main characters broke up. Well, one of them cold abandoned the other one on a hill.
After proposing, I believe.
After proposing, and she accepted. He walked immediately back to the car to get her a jacket because she was cold and then left. And this season opens up with both of them in two separate episodes.
I'm going to have some questions about that one. It has been... I've never watched an episode, and
Super weird jump-in point.
I did the great experiment. I jumped into a show four seasons in and decided I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to discuss that. But that's not the only show we're talking about. We're also talking about...
We're also going to talk about Rick and Morty.
I'm really glad we're checking in, and this is why we have Atlantis as the title.
But really, they go to space. They go to the Citadel, and we're going to talk about that episode.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to talk about The Orville, which is about comedy.
The smash hit, critics love, sci-fi, comedy, drama.
It's a joke, a minute fest that takes place in space.
I've heard things about this, and I'm sure we have opinions, so I'm excited to get to that as well, guys. But before we get into all of that, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And we want to remind you guys a little bit of house cleaning before we get into our listener questions. If you guys want to help support the show, a couple ways you can do that. We love all of your support over at patreon.com/TV Dudes. There, really easy system. You guys make a contribution per episode that we release. Say you give us $1 or $2. That helps us with our operating costs. It helps us with the studio that we are able to record in. Helps keep things going. And in exchange, we try to give you guys some fun, exclusive content, which is going to be in the form of podcasts, generally. We will record a little 30-minute episode each week where we're just kind of discussing anything that doesn't fall under the umbrella of TV.
We were going to give bonus Patreon, like, handmade candies, but there are a couple problems. One is none of us can make candy. The other is that we don't have most of your addresses.
And Randy kept
mailing candies about, and I kept eating it.
Randy kept putting razor blades in the ones we were going to send to. Not good, Randy.
You know what, Grant?
And then you ate them.
That was going to be a fun surprise for everyone.
That's what I didn't understand.
And instead, it was a fun challenge for me.
Oh, boy. So that's patreon.com/TV Dudes. This week, we might delve into some online controversy. Especially related to Austin, the Austin movie scene. So
we're gonna talk about the Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters, right?
We're always timely.
Gonna get right to it.
Yeah, you know that we're gonna be timely.
Wait, it's the all clown screening of it.
Yeah, all clown screening of it. We're gonna talk about how unfair that is to non clowns.
Anyway, patreon.com/TV Dudes. We appreciate all the support and thank you to everyone who's already signed up. We also want to say you guys can give us a little 5-star rating over at iTunes. That helps us out. And we are part of and proud to be a part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
This is a TV network collection of podcasts that all revolve around discussing TV. And yeah, we just want to plug the site. It's permanentrcrd.com.
PermanentRCRD.com.
Ridiculous. Please go check out a lot of the other shows. I would also like to give a quick shout out to a brand new show that's coming to the network, which is the Star Trek Discovery Pod. And this one I'm going to be on, guys.
Oh.
This is going to be...
Well, you're awesome. Such a big Star Trek fan. You love Star... You all have all things about Star Trek. You're always talking about your favorite 10 episodes of Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In seriousness, though, like, you're the red shirt of it. Like, you're the...
I am. We discussed this, in fact, on the episode that... I have an MO now for how I join a lot of these podcasts. I am the noob, the ignorant idiot, I guess, of a lot of these shows. I was on a beer podcast where I was brought on intentionally because I like beer, but I didn't know much about it. I was brought on to a video game show slash podcast because I don't know much about video games. And now I'm on this Star Trek one because I've never watched any Star Trek television episode ever.
Well, and I recently roped you into a new project.
Yeah.
Specifically.
That you've never seen.
Never That's seen right. the show I'm
The new project you're working on, which we haven't announced yet, I'm brought on because I don't know anything about it.
Great.
This
you know
is just my thing.
You know the Daily Show used to do like comedic titles like some of these senior black correspondents playing? You need to be like, senior doesn't know what he's talking about correspondent.
Ignorance expert.
Ignorance expert. Oh my God,
title.
I love it.
It's just totally fitting for me. Anyway, keep your eyes peeled. You can go like our Facebook page, Star Trek Discovery Pod. And we're also on Twitter. You can also check us out on permanentrcrd.com. I messed it up so you guys don't have to.
Permanentrcrd.com.
You guys are jerks. You guys are a bunch of jerks. All right, Randy. All right, Les. Let's jump over to our listener questions.
I'm excited.
Once a week, we put up a post. You guys can like our page, follow us there, and ask us questions, and we will read pretty much every question we get on the episode.
As is about to be proven.
we're going to do it. We got a bunch this week. First question comes to us from More Ben Rubin. Hopefully I got that name right. I think I say that every time. I'm like, I'm not sure if I pronounce it correctly. Hello, dudes. I recently saw an episode on Hulu from a show called Runaways. It was awful. I felt personally betrayed by Hulu because I thought they released The Runaways, you know, the one based on the comic. Having learned a valuable lesson in how a single determiner can mean different shows, I was wondering what alternative shittier shows you can think of by adding or removing a determiner. For example, instead of The Leftovers, we have Leftovers, a show about people eating leftovers and what choices they have made in their life that led them to eat this week's old pizza.
I love this question, and I went through and tried to find a few from my list of last year's shows, and so I got a few for you guys. There is The Americans, mm-hmm. which is a show about Cold War espionage in the 80s, just called Americans, and I feel like it's about fat people in the Midwest voting for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I've got – I know I found a couple more here. Let's see. The Flash. Uh-huh. Which is about a superhero who travels very quickly.
I know where
becomes
this one's
Flash.
Going.
Go ahead, by all means.
It's a show about people that expose themselves.
Yes, exactly. No, except it's a superhero whose power is that he wears a raincoat and nothing else and terrifies school children.
What a hero.
But he's still better at keeping his secret identity than Barry Allen, by necessity. Because if that guy goes around telling everybody who he is, he's going to jail.
Okay, that's perfect.
And then let's see. I feel like there was another. Oh, this is a show that's off the air now. But The League, which is a show about fantasy football playing fans,
mm-hmm.
becomes League, which is just about a bunch of guys bowling.
That makes sense. That fits. You know what? I was thinking about this, and I was like, what if you just changed a letter
yeah.
in the word? And I was like, you could take The Office and change it to The Orifice. And you don't want to go to The Orifice.
You don't want to go to The Orifice. That could also be a show about dentists.
I suppose it's
or
true.
Proctologists.
Or proctologists. That's a little bit more what I had in mind.
Or a weird combination where it's like a half office like in Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
Where like one of them is a dentist and the other is a proctologist and you don't want to go to the wrong office. Because you're going to proceed with this very painful in the wrong place.
You know that wacky episode yes. where they switch bodies? Different cavity searches. Les, what do you got?
Well, like first when I started thinking about it, the shows that I was taking words away from, I kept improving.
like
Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
But I would watch Dynasty. And honestly, I'd watch a show about Duck from Mad Men.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. That's
just
good,
called
yeah,
Duck.
For sure.
You know, but then it started to make sense. Like Better Call Saul, if you drop Saul, then that's just a Better Call, and it's just a reality show where a grandmother just like cold calls. Like they have a different grandmother each week. She just cold calls like her grandkids, and then just chastises them for not calling her first.
Yes.
Yeah. ER, but we would drop the R, and it would just be a show about E from Entourage.
Oh, God.
Going forward.
It was like the only tolerable part of that show, I guess.
I still don't think it'd be good, though.
No.
And then Greatest American Hero. Which was a super fun show, but if yeah. you drop the hero from it, it's just Greatest American, and that's like a total RoboCop era reality show that like you'd buy that for a dollar. Like
yeah.
you just watch people like try to out-American each other, you know, Carl's Jr. Big Ass Fries style.
I like it.
What about Mad Men? But you just drop it to Men, and it's about like dudes that are shitty. Oh, wait, that's the same thing as Mad Men.
And Entourage.
Well, I feel like they had men behaving badly.
That's not, true. Not yeah. Good.
And then, yeah.
Men behaving. Yeah. Just men behaving. You see, all these dudes are just shutting up.
Could you turn 2.5 men into half men?
Oh, God, I'd watch the shit out of half men.
Would they be little people, or would they be like man-beast analogs?
Like centaurs?
Centaurs,
oh, yeah, yeah. I hope it's chimeras and not Peter. I hope Peter Dinklage is still the lead.
Yeah, yeah, but he's a centaur.
And it has nothing to do with being short. Like the whole show. It's
he's
all
like the
it's
ringmaster.
All CG. He's giant. He's half a bear.
He's the ringmaster at the centaur circus.
This is perfect. All right, next question, guys. Zach McLernan says, as I watched the latest episode of Rick and Morty, I recalled the great debate between the TV dudes as they debated whether Rick and Morty or Game of Thrones should be spared from the destruction of the hands of Lord Garmadon. A certain TV dude, who knows who he is,
hi,
stated that he would not save Rick and Morty in the fact that Rick and Morty was animated and it made it lesser than Game of Thrones. While this might be a slight paraphrasing...
No, you got it.
You son of a bitch. It got me thinking. Does the fact that a show is animated give it less meaning or validity? Can a show be or should be taken seriously against a live action show and be held to the same level of standards? Do some TV dudes let their biases show sometimes? Then here's a series of hashtags he's given. Hashtag Drone Throne. Hashtag Saga on TV 2019. Hashtag Seriously Saga on TV. Hashtag Westerflow's High in Production.
All right. First of all, let me answer this in reverse. Yes, I have a bias against animated shows because I don't think they're especially with something like Rick and Morty.
Mm-hmm.
I love Rick and Morty. Rick and Morty is a great show, and it's got a lot more depth. So something like BoJack Horseman. But if you put any of those up against, say, Mad Men or The Wire or even Game of Thrones, I feel like you don't get the same subtleties. You need human actors. The animation is good, but it's not good enough to get all the subtlety of emotion and that kind of you get from an actual human actor. So I do think they've got a disadvantage. I also will say the goal of what Rick and Morty is doing is a lot lesser than what Game of Thrones is doing. They're not aiming as high. And in fact, the only animated shows I would say belongs in sort of TV Hall of Fame probably is The Simpsons, because it was doing something nobody else was doing. And then Parks and Rec did it better in live action. Boom. That's what I said.
I mean, most animated shows are going to be comedic.
Yeah.
It just tends to lean that way. You're not going to find a lot of people that invest in an animated show do it for it's also a matter of format. It's easier to keep it to 30 minutes or less in an animated show. It's a lot of animation to do for an hour long, which is typically the format that you get a drama in.
Yeah.
But given it's going to be comedy, I think it's harder for people to look at that and put it on the same level as a show like Mad Men about like the caliber of acting that you're getting there. I'm not sure I necessarily agree, but I think it's a little bit comparing apples to oranges. It's hard to place the merits of a comedy on the scale of a drama and say that the comedy is going to be better because you're measuring two different things.
That's fair.
If I had to take and put a comedy against other comedies, I would say these anime comedies are some of the best things I'm seeing on TV, and I like them more than pretty much any other comedy I'm seeing.
That's fair. Maybe I do have a bias because I compare comedy to comedy and I go Good Place, Parks and Rec, Cheers. I'd put all of those above Rick and Morty for me.
No. Well, there's definitely a disadvantage in subtlety of drawn faces and how many moving lines there are on any given animated cell. And so yeah, there's going to be drama stuff that you're just not going to zoom in and see. And so I think you're right, Grant. Like comedy or animated shows aim for a different thing. Like knowing that you can't go for like that granular fine drama, like facial expressions and emoting. Instead, Rick and Morty swings for the fences on creativity of writing and plot that consistently surprises me in a way that hardly any television does. That show is phenomenally imaginative in what it's doing with its characters. They may not all be able to emote, but the way they play the interpersonal conflicts and the not just the zaniness of the plots, like where they go in their crazy adventures and shit, but how the family functions together,
the emotional
when they get
depth,
home. I mean the lonely shit with Jerry is really desolated lonely, but But that's not coming through from the emotion. That's the writing. I feel like Rick and Morty is a phenomenally well-written show, and animated shows, if they know where that weak point is going to be, that you're not going to do this. You're not going to give me an hour-long drama I give a shit about animated. Probably not. But you can give me 30 minutes of, like, holy crap, there's no way you could budget that.
I mean, BoJack Horseman, it's heartbreaking what they're able to accomplish in that 30-minute format.
Yeah.
And they're able to hold their own against a show like Arrested Development, them and Rick and Morty, with their depth of layering jokes, of background humor, of rewatchability.
Like, I haven't watched a whole lot of Game of Thrones, but the 4 hours of it I've seen looked like a lot of sword and sorcery I've seen since I was five. And Rick and Morty doesn't look like anything I've ever fucking watched before.
That's fair.
Yeah. All right, next question comes to us from Jonathan Haptemichael, who says, "Hi, dudes. Next Sunday is the series finale of FX's The Strain, but the penultimate episode did not have the feel of the incoming finality. The protagonists are ready to kill the master with a nuclear warhead and are surrounded by a horde of vampires, but the stakes..." Is that a pun? "Feel like there are two or three more episodes left. What shows do you dudes think had a not-so-perfect lead-up to the series finale? P.S. The Orville was okay. There is too much Seth MacFarlane hate, even if it's warranted in most situations."
So, first, I'm with Les. The Strain is still on.
I had no idea. I was so excited for this show when it was going to premiere, and then I so dropped it so fast.
Yeah,
I'm with you guys.
Yeah, so...
For getting to the master, that's great.
But the question, not so perfect lead-ups to series finales. The one that jumps to my mind is Alias. Alias was a hot garbage mess by the time they were getting to the end, and they were just trying to wrap things up, and it just made no sense at all.
Yeah.
And I remember that. I remember thinking, like, where are you guys going with this? You keep adding stuff, and it's not the point to be adding. You should be tying things off.
I always bitch about it, but Sons of Anarchy. I just, what a squandered show.
Oh, just everybody in a Christ pose for an hour. Just a whole episode.
Fuck you, Kurt Sutter.
Yeah, that was so heavy-handed.
I would never say that to his face.
No,
he's a bit of
crap, buddy.
No, I wouldn't even say that near Kathy Siegel, or Katie Siegel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's probably most shows. I mean, I was trying to think of shows that I actually put up with the full last season of to watch the actual series finale, and it's very rare, and usually then there's so much pressure on that show that they've got to spend so much fan service in the last season getting everybody's final nods that they break whatever story they were trying to tell.
Right.
And so, very rarely does one stick. I didn't mind the ending of How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
That's one of the ones I did watch the whole thing, and there was all the water cooler talk and shit about it. I didn't mind the ending of it as much, but again, there was so much pressure on it. There's no way you're going to make your fan base happy, really.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting about that, How I Met Your Mother, is that a lot of the times by the time these shows get to their ending, they should have ended two or three seasons ago. So whatever leading up to is already hot garbage. Yeah. I mean,
their
the
whole
Office,
last season broke for
The me. Office did that. I mean, The Office was a mess.
It was a bad lead up.
Yeah.
But I liked the finale.
It was a good finale. Yeah.
I mean, similarly, what show was I just thinking about? I just lost it. I had some other show that I was just like...
I was going to say Lost.
Okay, Lost had some problems.
What?
But it was a perfect show, and
okay,
I don't know you're talking about.
For a second there, I thought you'd been taken over my brain parasites.
No, I was actually going to talk about some first... Oh, it was the first season finale. It doesn't really count, but The Killing. I'm still mad about how that build up. Went
me too. I didn't watch any more of The Killing because of that.
Yeah, it got better after that, but what a shame. All right, my boy Mike Chung is back with another question, guys.
Yeah.
He says, "I listened to the podcast last week, and I knew you missed me as much as I missed you, Grant. As soon as I finished building this shrine devoted to you and your genitalia, oh boy, I'll come to Austin, Texas and make sweet... sweet, consensual sex to you forever and ever. No question at all. Just want to tell Grant to be prepared."
Read
and then
the emoji.
He ends with an eggplant emoji.
You know what that means, right? You know what it means? Penis.
Thanks, Randy.
And I want to note that this is not in Vermont. You're going to have sweet love made to you in Texas.
Is that a...
I think all previous ones, I want to say for some reason...
It was Virginia.
Is it Virginia? Because it's for lovers. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. But
No, he's coming to you now.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, save on gas, I guess. Bright side this. All right. Thank you, Mike. Paul Mampilli says, with the majority of will they, won't they in sitcoms, can you ever spoil it? I accidentally spoiled to a friend of mine who's watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine and said that the main two get together and argued my point that trope always ends up with them getting together. So can it be spoiled?
It can be spoiled. All things can be spoiled. But if you're watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you're really invested in the Jake and Amy relationship, you're watching it wrong.
Yeah.
Because who gives a shit? I mean, that's really not the point.
I can't even think of any like plot arcs in that show that were, like, are crucial.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I understand where your humor comes from not knowing what's coming. Like, if someone explains a joke to you, it's not going to be funny. I understand where that's a spoiler. But, yeah, it's – I mean, yes, technically it can be a spoiler. If someone's upset that you spoiled them, the correct polite thing to do is say, oh, man, I'm sorry I spoiled that for you.
Yeah.
Just do it. Just do it. It's polite.
Say it with a shrug and an eye roll.
Yeah. And then make fun of them to your friends all you want. But just be nice about it and just say, yeah, I'm sorry I spoiled that for you. But, yeah, no, that's a dumb spoiler.
Yeah, I don't – I mean, yes, on the one hand, you could be told that that's going to happen. But come on, that trope is inevitably arcing towards them getting together. I would bet that the number of shows who have a real will they, won't they, that never once gets together is up there with shows that have just killed their main cast as their season finale.
Yeah.
Or as their series finale. Like,
yeah.
That may have happened, but I bet it's like, yep, one entry in Wikipedia. because the will they, won't they will. I mean, no, Ross and Rachel eventually kiss and then don't. And then, I mean.
Whoa, spoilers.
No, right? Like, this is not the plot arc of any show. Any show, yeah, with a will they, want they, will they, won't they. You know they fucking will.
Yeah. I mean, some people aren't as savvy to tropes, so I guess you can just be like, oh, my bad, but you know, they should know. Yeah. I'm with you, Paul.
Yeah.
they should know better.
I'm as spoiler sensitive as anyone on this podcast, and I think that's crazy.
I also don't think that I view spoiler as not telling me that something's going to happen is not quite the same as describing how it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like telling me all the details of the storyline in the episode that finally is the straw that breaks it and that makes them get together, going into that detail is way more of a dick move than just saying, hey, you know, they eventually do end up together.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never minded the Hodor thing. I thought, like, if someone went into detail of how it happened, then I'm kidding.
He's on Game of Thrones, right?
They can't hear my eyes burning. They can't hear the burning Death Star I'm giving you, Grant. We're on a podcast.
You are Cyclops, just like burning scars into my body. Mike Moody, our fearless permanent record leader.
Permanent record leader.
Says, guys, I assume you're covering the Orville. Good luck with that. So I thought this would be a great time to ask if you've seen the great space set comedy Other Space from Paul Feig. Is it Paul Feig? I think that's how you pronounce it. Feig?
I don't know.
Feig, I think.
You can watch it here, and he gives a link to shareotherspace.tumblr.com. Talk about it instead of the Orville, because the Orville looks like dog shit. Thank you, fearless leader. Yes, I've seen Other Space. I love it.
Fantastic. I actually watched that last week for the first time.
It came out on Yahoo when they were doing a short run of their own original programming.
Yeah, it was up at the same time as the last Community season,
yeah,
and it is start to finish, I think, funnier and more solid than that Community season.
Yeah, it's 6 episodes, and it was fantastic.
It's fantastic.
You know what's weird? I watched 2 episodes. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, but it didn't click with me.
It's just really lighthearted and fun, and I
need to give it another try, clearly, because everybody loves it.
Build up really well, I feel like. The crew's weirdness builds
and,
up
and it has the cute girl from the AT&T commercials.
It does. She's going to be a Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl. Yep.
Yeah, it's got Squirrel Girl in it. Anyway, go check that out, guys. Kobe Clark says, hi, dudes. I had made a comment just after the upfronts about how McFarlane looked like he was going to do Star Trek better than CBS. High bar to clear, right? Truth be told, I started watching The Orville expecting a Family Guy-esque 50 fart jokes per minute type show. Instead, I got a pilot that felt like the one or two humor episodes a sci-fi show would do each season. And to be honest, I kind of want a whole season of that type of show. With that said, what show's one-off episode would you want a whole season of? For example, Buffy, the musical season,
yes.
X-Files, where they travel to the county staying in haunted houses, busting ghosts, or Lost. Every episode has a reasonable conclusion.
I feel like this question was just trolling Grant, because it's like, more musical episodes, less Lost. Yes, I co-signed on all 3 of those, by the way. I would love that, except I actually think Lost is pretty good. But I would like all of Lost to be as good as its best episodes. Like, I want them all to be walkabout. You know, that would be great if they could all have been that level.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, only two weren't.
Nikki and Paolo.
And the tattoo episode.
And the tattoo episode.
Those are the only two that were a problem. Otherwise, it was perfect.
Otherwise, perfect show?
Perfect, like, 150-episode show.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, that's from my completely unbiased opinion, guys.
I would like Supernatural to do the episodes where they're, like, the demon is messing with them and changing their timeline. Like, it's the, they do the one where they're, like, they're in, a 50s sitcom.
Oh, like the meta episodes?
Like the meta episodes. I want all meta episodes. And then I want or alternately, ones where they go to conventions and discover that there's fanfic about them and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want
all that the High School Musical one, right?
No, I have not.
Yeah, there's one where they discover that there's a High School Musical being done about them, like a high school play. Mm-hmm. And it's two girls cast as Sam and Dean. And they definitely play up all the shipping.
Okay,
like,
all right.
Much too, they play up the Wincest and Dean is just horrified.
I would like a whole episode or a whole season of You're the Worst. Not You're the Worst, but a separate spinoff based on the other couple from, was it season two?
Across the Street, yes.
Yeah. I want a whole story about those people. I want a whole season.
The Leftovers, I want International Assassin, entire season dedicated to when they just go off the rails crazy with an episode that is no longer tethered to reality, but it's just... the intricacies of dream sequences kind of piling up on each other. I'm fascinated by that.
Those are my favorite episodes. I would love that.
But I feel like maybe that wouldn't work because you needed the reality to ground where you knew the characters were before you kind of got to that point.
Sure.
So I don't know.
But you could do a whole season where it's like it starts in one thing and then it's crazy international session, and then there's that end bookend where they come out of it.
Sure.
We're doing the Vindicator Show, y'all. Vindicator Show.
All right. Nick Thighs says, "Hey, dudes, since I know Randy has now seen Middleman and a wonderful made-up card game, Shibumi,
yes.
I was wondering if you guys had any other favorite made-up games from TV shows."
True American.
True American.
True American from New Girl. That's the best made-up game ever.
So in Rocko's Modern Life.
Okay.
Wow.
Yep. The heifers, the neighbors come over to try to get Rocko and everybody to come out and do something with them. And like everyone else in the show is all inside at Rocco's house playing a board game together. And they won't let the heifers come play. And the board game that they're playing in the background that no one comments on has all of them around a table with their little game pieces. And there's a tiny pedestal in the middle of the table with a tiny monkey on the top of the pedestal. And they each have little like ping pong paddles because the game is Spank the Monkey.
This
is like mid 90s.
You guys remember the show Ed?
Yeah.
Yes. It's a travesty that show's not streaming, by the way, because it's a really fun show.
This is another reach. But
Justin Long.
But do you remember the game that they used to play? He and his buddy would play. Him or his buddy or his brother?
Mike. No, it's just his friend.
His friend, right? Yeah. The bet you $5?
Yep.
Yeah. That there was like a running gag where like $5 you won't do this. And it got increasingly it was hilarious. It was a great running gag.
Charty McDennis.
Oh yeah.
From It's Always
Charty
Sunny.
McDennis.
Whatever those rules are, it's always more and more fucked up.
I love that there's just a point where Charty McDennis ends because they're tired of playing the game.
Yeah. Okay. And I know Friends is controversial as whether it sucks or not, but the episode where they play the game show
the trivia
for the apartments, that's a great game.
Chenandler Bong?
Chenandler Bong. Ms. Chenandler Bong.
All right, last question comes to us from our buddy Jonathan Huffnagel. He says, "Good evening, TV dudes. I have returned to show you that while light may chase the darkness away, the darkness is always faster than light. This week, I saw It. A much welcome update to a TV miniseries. I also saw The Orville, which is a much needed parody of Star Trek. I also was greatly amused by Grant's lack of Star Trek wisdom. I now feel that the evil twin thing to do is to ask a Star Trek themed question. Grant, the Q are a race of omnipotent beings that know everything there is to know within the universe of Star Trek. So, in a sense, a Q is the opposite of you." Nice. "They also have a bunch of powers that basically allow them to do most anything. Essentially, Q add an element of sudden character conflict to the ordinary mortal lives of the Enterprise crew. As a writer myself, I often feel I am playing the role of a similar trickster. I add conflicts into peaceful lives of my characters in order to make the story more interesting. At times, I can even be a chaotically evil author who loves to mash two things together that shouldn't belong. If you were a Q and could introduce new conflict into the lives of a crew aboard a starship, what would you do? I am curious what amusing chaos you would each unleash upon reality, even if it's just a bunch of tribbles. I would personally throw the creature from it into Enterprise. Jeffrey Tubes. Enterprise's Jeffrey Tubes. I don't know what that is. You guys probably know. How delightful.
So the Jeffrey's Tubes are like the diehard corridors of the starship.
Okay, okay.
That's what you use to crawl around when the Klingons take over the ship. Yeah.
Are they named after a guy named Jeffrey?
It's possible. I don't actually know that.
I don't know the etymology of that. But yeah, putting the it monster in those is pretty cool.
I would say, here's what I want, because given how Star Trek, especially Next Generation, is such a sexless place, I want to throw like, I don't know, the cast from maybe You're the Worst, or I'm sure there's a bit like maybe the hookers from Deadwood. I want to throw them aboard the ship. Just like they come spilling out of the holodeck, and they got to deal with that.
I do like this idea of suddenly like introducing a whole nother cast into the operation. And
the,
see, like,
the cast of the League shows up on the Enterprise and sort of takes over the ship and starts using it to try and forecast fantasy football, like running simulations of the holodeck.
Okay.
The Enterprise with Captain Frank Gallagher. I just want Frank Gallagher from Shameless, British or U.S. Oh, I'm thinking William H. Macy, and just give him a starship and let them go.
They will go right into a wall that was suddenly built in space.
What's the Klingon blue liquor?
Romulan ale.
Yeah, you know they're just going to head towards that wherever he hears about a weird new space drug. Picking him up off of weird different floors, and
I would watch that before I watch another episode of The Orville.
So we got the news this week, and there's just a few things. Apparently, Netflix wanted to film Stranger Things season 3 and 4 back to back, presumably so that the kids don't age out of the roles.
I mean, that would make sense.
That's a smart move.
Yeah. But it sounds – I haven't read the article yet, but the article makes it sound – the headline makes it sounds like wanted to means they didn't do that.
Well, I'm wondering how the creators felt about that.
Yeah, I imagine there would also be contract disputes with some people, like, you know, as far as like, right, are you going to pay us more for the extra work? Like,
it looks like the Duffer brothers and the Sean Levy and the other producers banded together to veto it. So.
they said we can't do it that fast.
I love the idea, though.
Sure.
Like, just
keeping them, yeah.
Crank them out, yeah.
But I also know from – there's been interviews with the Duffer brothers about what they want to do with the show, and that they have zero intention of the show running indefinitely. They don't want it to keep going. They don't want it to get crappy. So I can see them going, no, we're not just going to rush two more seasons for you guys.
Yeah, they want to do their four seasons to be done. By the way, this article mentions that the members of the cast, these kids – all get $30,000 per episode with a less than six-figure bonus tied to the success of the show. Can you imagine when you were that age, if you had – how many episodes? 10 episodes?
Uh-huh.
$300,000 to throw around? Would you listen to a word your parents said anymore?
If they got that for the first season, that makes sense. But given the success of this show –
there's no way that
show,
should still be what they're paid.
No,
they should be making – when Friends was making $1 million an episode, these kids should be making a lot more per episode.
Oh, I'm not saying they shouldn't make it. I just think it's a hilarious –
you know, season one, that's a crazy amount of money
for a kid.
It's a crazy amount of money for a kid.
They're not Friends. They're not on CBS or something. So I understand the numbers are going to be a little bit different.
Right, but
even though they're Netflix – but Netflix is throwing around some serious money and pay them.
But say these kids are a tenth of the Friends cast, and that would still put them at $100,000 an episode.
Yeah. It's just crazy to me, like, to think of having that much money as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way that I would have responsibly used that money. I would have bought a Lamborghini like several Lamborghinis.
You would have done a bunch of drugs in the Viper room or whatever.
Exactly. And that's the other thing. It's like, man, I hope somebody's managing these kids' money and not letting any drug dealers near them.
11-year-old ODs on the sidewalk in front of the Viper Club. Yeah, that'd be bad.
That's not good. That's not good press.
Yeah, I imagine they're all. I mean, I think more and more it's not the 80s and 90s, and these kids are a guarded property, not just for, you know, for the show, but also like recognizing how this can be detrimental to their lives. And I think people like take that into a lot more consideration now.
But Grant, you did give me a good idea, which is that these kids are going to sort of age out of these roles. And, you know, if the show continues to be successful and they get to like season 5, they're going to need to recast. So I say they go to the cast of Friends and they recast them in these roles. And then they make a show about Stranger Things 30 years later. You think?
Yeah.
Jeffrey Schwimmer. I don't know who would be the 11. Maybe Jeffrey Schwimmer. Maybe Lisa Kudrow. Not sure. But definitely recast.
David Schwimmer?
David Schwimmer could be 11. Sure.
It seems like a Funny or Die or College Humor skit.
I don't know.
The Stranger Things class reunion.
Yes, exactly. How does American Summer did it. Jim Carrey and the Eternal Sunshine director have reunited for a comedy series. So that's Michelle Gondry.
Yeah.
They're doing a new Showtime series called Kidding, which is created by Dave Holstein from Weeds and Raising Hope. Revolves around a children's television show character named Mr. Pickles, whose on-screen demeanor and lifestyle is night and day from the actor who plays him, a man so far only referred to as Jeff. So it's like, what if Mr. Rogers was actually a jackass? That seems like right up Jim Carrey's alley.
I'm interested in Carrey being on a TV show. I mean, he hasn't done that since. I mean, has he ever been on one aside from like In Living Color?
In Living Color is the last
time. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, Gondry's version of Jackass is going to still be kind of sweethearted.
Yeah.
So I'm all right with this.
I like how Gondry would complement and temper the more outlandish elements of Carrey or his sensibilities.
His shtick,
it would keep him grounded in a way that would make this appealing to me.
Now, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've not actually seen it, not just not remembering it, but I've never seen Eternal Sunshine.
Oh, it's great. It's ironic that you don't remember it because that's what the whole movie's about.
Yeah, no, movie
is
came
it
out
possible
like,
you did see it and you didn't like it?
That's what I'm wondering
now.
I'm wondering now if I just hated it and had it erased.
Yeah.
No, it came out like the year before my divorce and was my ex-wife's favorite movie.
Mm.
Or one of my ex-wife's favorite movies. And so I didn't watch it and then it, like, I hadn't seen it and then it became a thing of like, no, I don't really want to sit down and watch that. I'm good.
I can see that.
So King of the Hill revival continues to gain steam as Pamela Adlon said she would voice Bobby Hill again. Okay.
Right.
Fuck yeah. I mean, they're gonna need a new person for the daughter, right? Brittany Murphy.
Yeah. Luann Platter's gone.
Yeah.
Unless Luann Platter is also gone. Unless his writer out.
I mean, what would they do? Like pick this up like years later kind of thing?
I don't know what they're gonna do. I don't know if they're just gonna reboot it or I'm eager to see whatever happens with the King.
Yeah, sure.
You guys were big fans. I never cared for it.
I really liked it. I didn't see all of it, but I've watched a lot of it, and it's really good.
It grew on me over years of running until it turned into just a really amazing thing.
Yeah.
I just didn't like Texas culture and the idea of anything that seemed like that at the time. I was just like, ugh, this is like animated country music. No, thank you. But I didn't know any better. I just didn't watch it.
It took me a little while to get. When it first started airing, I was trying to get out of that town. And
I ended up moving right there next to it takes place in Ireland, which is fictionalized Garland. Yep. And I moved to Plano right next to it. So.
Okay. All right. Final bit of news here, which is potentially disturbing. Star Trek Discovery is not being screened for critics.
No joke.
Yeah.
Okay. I know that is universally a bad sign. Like that's just always a this show's bad and they know it. But really, what possible thing when it comes to a property like Star Trek,
right,
where before you even announce that there are any detail about the show, we're going to do a new Star Trek show, you're going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Half the fans said that immediately upon announcement of the show. Who's involved? And then before any names even got to, you're going to fuck it up. And so where would the upside be to them screening this for critics?
Yeah,
and that's, half of the critics are going to roast it.
Yeah,
and a portion of fans will then actually not watch it. Whereas if they don't screen it for critics, all of the fans will watch it to judge themselves, yay or nay. But I feel like there really is. There's going to be a low grade. ooh, they didn't screen it for critics, so it must suck.
Right.
But they have that going against them anyway. I really don't feel like there's an upside to them showing it to critics and setting themselves up for what is just going to be this week's pop culture
hate on. I actually agree with you here. I think that they're, like I say, it's CBS All Access. It's going to get the audience is going to get. And like you say, everyone who wants to see Star Trek wants to see if they're going to do it. Even if we all think it's going to suck, we want to confirm that for ourselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're right. This is the right move. But it does have a sort of stink of, uh-oh.
There's no like good marketing move for them.
If they were really proud of it, they would have the critics. They wouldn't embargo the reviews, at least, for people who are seeing premieres.
No, they're also embargoed, yeah. Though they also – I saw – I think the best piece I've seen on Star Trek Discovery was about the marketing not knowing what they were doing with it. Is this a show out of continuity for people that just kind of like Trek but aren't really big Trek fans and they want to get us to tune in? Or is this a continuity nerd Easter egg fest for Trek fans? Because they're trying to pitch it to both sides.
I mean, it makes sense that they do the marketing to target new fans.
Yeah.
They have the old ones in their pocket. So when they do a trailer, and you know, this is also the product of how trailers work nowadays. They theme different ones to target different audiences.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have it heavily action forward and looking a lot more like the Abrams kind of model of Star Trek, and that's to get people in the seats.
Yeah. Well, and they caught shit for saying that they had ditched Roddenberry's rule of no intercrew conflict, but Next Generation tried to ditch that every script too. I mean, like, that's conflict's part of what drives drama. And like, I know Roddenberry wanted there to be a nice universe and stuff, but this show, like, there's a contingency that's going to pounce on everything about this show until it airs.
Well, interestingly, Entertainment Weekly source claims the embargo is in place to ensure plot details don't leak, which has been used. Like Game of Thrones has done that. And the thing is, if there is some kind of twist in this thing that they haven't blown yet, which there could, because Brian Fuller was heavily involved in development.
Well, they're totally going to kill the captain and have what's her name? Green, like,
there's, there
take
could
over,
be,
right?
There could be something we're not expecting. And in that case, I kind of want them to hold off on it. And like Les said, there's no upside to them releasing to critics. It does give a stink of failure to it, but it's had that since it lost Brian Fuller.
Yeah.
You know, we were discussing that as well on our upcoming our preview podcast, which should be coming out this week or next week, pretty soon. So stay tuned, guys. But the idea that, like, Brian Fuller, him leaving may have been a blessing for this show.
Sure.
That guy's got a very distinct visual flair and eye, and it's akin to the Edgar Wright issue with Marvel and Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to see that, but as far as building off of an ongoing franchise, he might have been too distinct a voice and had too much of a need to put his vision above the overall vision of the brand.
Yeah.
And I wonder if other people that are a little bit more team players keep this grounded to the universe that everyone already loves and keeps it familiar.
It's possible. I'm actually really interested to watch this. I'm not expecting it to be good, but I'm still kind of hoping it will be.
There's a couple of things to go into. I'm eager to see if it works as a television show. I mean, does this pilot work?
Right.
Separately, does this work as Star Trek?
Yeah.
But I am almost the same as Grant's position on, like, I don't. My Trek background started a few years ago of getting interested in it, not when I was a kid. Like, I had Trekkie friends, and I went, I'm not watching that. It just wasn't the sci-fi for me. And so I'm fairly newbie at enjoying Star Trek. I'm really more interested to see if this works as a flipping sci-fi show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The worst.
Oh, Grant, it hurts.
You're the worst too, Randy.
I am the worst.
Because you guys...
No, there can be only one worst, Randy. I have to Highlander it. Lowlander?
Lowlander. Lowlander.
You guys just dick punch each other to death.
That's all that is. It's shamble. It's like a bat fight.
Whoever throws the first dick punch is the worst. So, yeah.
So, this is the fourth season premiere.
Yep.
It was a two-parter. And I've never seen the show, so I finally decided I'll jump in and watch this these episodes.
Did it do a previously on? I'm trying to remember now.
No. My introduction to this show, it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
And you guys can first start with what you guys
thought
about it.
Okay, so at the end of season three, as everybody remembers, Gretchen and Jimmy were on the hill and the crystal shattered. And they turned into two separate Wait, that's Dark Crystal.
Yeah, yeah. No, the end of this season was that they went up to the top of the L.A. Hillside. They were looking over L.A. There was a light, a mysterious light, and they went down. There was a hatch.
Yes.
And
yes.
No, you know what? That was lost.
No,
I'm super interested all of a sudden, but no.
At the end of season three, the will they, won't they of this show, mm-hmm. which, I mean, they've always been a couple, but like, will they kill each other or
will
make
they stay
it?
Stay together, yeah. We'll make it, yeah.
Jimmy proposed. And didn't just leave it hanging. She says yes. And mm-hmm. then they're standing there, and it's a moment. And she says she's a little bit cold, and he's going to run to the car and get the jacket for her. And he goes to the car, and he gets in the car, and he turns the engine, and he fucking leaves her.
Yep.
And there's no reason why, no explanation.
He clearly, you saw his face. He clearly freaked out.
Yeah. Like, she white freaks out and bolts.
He's got huge commitment issues, and that's come up before.
He didn't expect her to say yes, kind of thing?
She says yes and says, we're going to be a family.
And that's, he freaks out because his family's so fucked up because he just lost his dad. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He flips out.
So this first episode opens on him. Is his name Jimmy?
Jimmy,
and he is like, out on his own, living in a retirement village with a bunch of old people, away from like the rest of the cast.
He's gone off the grid.
No cell phone, nothing. Yeah,
and
watching Fall Guy from the library on VHS,
and he's just kind of off the grid, enjoying being away from everything.
Yep.
And I don't know, I watched the episode and nothing struck me as like all that funny. Nothing struck me as. All that interesting. I was like, okay, I kind of get who this guy is and that he's running away from something, but I wasn't really sure what he was running away from at the time.
It was a weird You're the Worst does this. They'll do an episode where it's focused on the neighbors and they don't even check into the characters really. And so this is an episode where the main story is about this old guy deciding to be okay with being an old guy, and he's not even a regular customer. We're never going to see him again. But he was played by Raylan's dad from Justified.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's great. And so I liked the interaction between them, and I liked that story. But yeah, it was a weird place to start back in. It is definitely the weirdest place you could have started. You're the Worst.
Well, and they needed a story. Jimmy's relationship with his father, who died in season three, is kind of reflected in where he ends up sitting drinking with this guy doing nothing. It's very much the American redneck version of his British dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
I didn't know that there's like some parallels of his father's son.
Yeah, you kind of watch Jimmy slide into what his dad, what he hated about his dad while waiting on the galley for his book. But yeah, I really didn't like, I only enjoyed the first episode of this season because they were friends of mine from 3 years of a show.
Yeah.
I knew who this character was.
Right. So you guys encouraged me to jump into and just start right here at the show.
I really didn't know they were going to just start it with a split episode weirdness.
But you guys were aware of how it ended the last season. Yeah. What did you guys kind of have an expectation that this would start
I figured
with?
They'd jump forward a bit.
I figured that start out with both of them in separate relationship and just kind of follow them both in the same episode.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they were going to cold separate it into a Jimmy episode where he interacts with zero other cast from the show, cast from the show, and then a Gretchen episode where basically she's back and there's a hole where Jimmy is in the show.
Yeah.
So my issues with this, I'll let you guys talk about first.
This was like watching The Leftovers. If you came and you watched an episode, one of the episodes where Nora was gone, and it's like, or when Kevin had left, and you're like, well, this is who's this Kevin they're also obsessed with?
What's going on here?
Yeah, it was a weird place to jump in. But I thought the first episode was a little weak, so I was glad they released them. It's one of the things that they know they can do. They released both episodes the same day. So essentially, it's a 1 hour episode.
Yeah.
Just the first half is Jimmy.
The first half, the Jimmy half, is just really not that funny.
It's a little weird. Yeah.
There's no jokes.
It's very
really
melancholy. Yeah.
It's not that funny. And I didn't find the story all that intriguing because I don't have a history with this character.
Right.
I don't have a history with the other characters, too.
Right. And that surely had to affect it because the second part is all about the two screw ups, Edgar Quintero and Lindsay, who they have been, I mean, Edgar's been the punching bag of life for a long, long time. Yeah. And Lindsay's been the actual worst.
Is that the dude from Girls?
Is that where he's from? Desmond Borges?
He's from The Trunk and Preacher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
he's great.
Yeah, Desmond Borges is great.
He's great. And I love Heather Donahue. Yeah. So seeing the two of them as like, he's become a successful actor. He works for Doug Benson. Yeah. And she's become a successful fashionista, which she doesn't actually understand, which makes perfect sense for Lindsay. And Gretchen has turned into what Lindsay was, just a mess who wants to just do drugs and stay home with her friend.
And can't function, can't get her life together. Gretchen's lying to her band that she is the manager or the publicist for, telling her that she's out of the country.
Which was one of my favorite scenes, by the way. I love the band. Yes. Is it Shitstain and Honey Nuts?
Shitstain, Honey Nuts,
and whatever the lead character's
Sam.
Name. Sam, yeah.
Wait, what band?
This is the – when she was preparing to be in Paris and talking to those guys.
Oh.
So that's the band she manages?
She's a PR person.
Yeah.
And she's been their PR person. That's her main job. And the interaction between that group and her is always one of my favorite things. But you really get a little taste of it in this.
At season one, she was viciously competent.
Yeah.
Like really good at her job just by force of personality. And now all of that is cracked.
Yeah, I was amused when she was like, you know, this is a good place to market you guys on account of Brexit.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, okay, Brexit. Yeah, well, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah. I love that this show will just go so far in its use of sex and drugs. She's like, I got us some crack. Let's smoke crack. And at no point does Lindsay go, no. And just, okay, let's do some crack.
Oh, yeah. And then Lindsay the next day at work just, I smoke crack. Fire me, fine. Fire me.
So my impression of this, never having seen this show before, was I was annoyed pretty immediately with the Lindsay character.
Yep.
With the happy-go-lucky asshole sequence in the beginning. Where she's like marching around and like being a dick
Mary
to everyone.
Tyler Moore.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, I get it, but am I supposed to like this? Am I supposed to just immediately hate this person?
She's the legit worst.
She is the worst.
She stabbed the nicest person on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually stabbed him. She was married to him.
She was married to him. She just turned around and stabbed him in the kitchen.
Also, I love Lindsay, but she's a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, I got what their intent was, and it just didn't get me as like funny. I was just like, screw that person. But then Aya Cash, what's her name?
Aya Cash. Gretchen.
Gretchen. I didn't like her character. I didn't like her acting in this. I thought her trying to play a person in a cocaine-fueled mania was annoying the whole time. And I don't have any history. I don't know. I didn't know this was supposed to be a contrast from a previous
version. And that's the thing. Yeah, this is probably the worst possible place to jump in because every single one of these was set up against three seasons of expectations. Yeah,
I do worry, having watched three episodes of this now, that they have taken that they have slowly broken Gretchen's character to a place that is unlikable and may not be able to get back to likable.
That is a word.
Prior to the end
of
the season. I mean, it may take a season to get it back, and that's not going to work for me.
It just felt cartoony. In fact, like between the two episodes, I liked the first episode a lot more with Jimmy. But even then, I was just a little bit confused. And it's a little bit disappointing since I've heard so much hype about this. I feel I should just go back to the beginning and start
go to a previous season.
Jumping in.
Yeah, you should go to the beginning because
it's warming back in. Like the third episode combines the chocolate and peanut butter back together. A little bit.
What a gross combination!
But
my mayonnaise.
I love all these actors. I love all these characters, and so I'm really enjoying it. It is a weaker show right now. But I have huge amounts of faith in this cast and this creators, and I would definitely recommend going back and starting in season one. Because, starting season four turns out to be a terrible idea with this show.
But you guys are pretty excited about it.
Yeah. Oh, I really like it.
I'm still excited about it, but I didn't realize just how awkward a jump in place season four would be.
I didn't mean to hijack y'all's review of the show itself to be like, well, from my perspective,
I'm always kind of
what
interested
the fuck?
In how that
I was curious.
Yeah. Well, let's jump over to Rick and Morty.
Yep.
Because they've been doing a fantastic job, I think, this whole season.
Yep.
But this particular episode, what was this called?
The
Rick Lantis mix-up does something.
It goes ham, bro.
I found pretty phenomenal.
Yep.
It compacts so much story and character, like A, B, C, D plots into a 30-minute episode. It truncates a lot of great like drama into a comedic 30-minute animated set, and this is Dan Harmon just showing off his skill. And I was blown away by how they could like drive home all these different plots, make you care about these different characters in these different aspects of this Citadel life.
Yeah, where the whole society. Yeah.
Of Rick and Morty's. How much this was an exercise in skill from Justin Roiland doing all of the voices of all of the characters,
all of
and yet giving them a bit of different personality. It was just impressive,
Rick
all
D
across
Rick
the board.
C, that guy.
all the jokes, all the different plot lines, and then expanding and enriching the mythology and really driving a narrative with a villain. Man, I'm blown away by this.
It's a game change. So, I mean, like, it's a paradigm change in terms of who the villain is in this show.
Yeah.
Or what the, like, you know what, well, A, there is a big bad now, and it's not Rick. It's not our Rick. I had always just assumed the big bad on this show would always be the protagonist.
And spoilers, you guys can jump ahead to our review of The Orville if you want. But Evil Morty at the end being the twist, you can kind of tell if you've been like invested in this show and like paid attention, you got the sense that it was likely going to be him.
But, or if you got a bunch of friends on Facebook who just talk shit about things before you've seen it.
Oh, did that happen to you?
Someone mentioned Evil Morty. They're like, oh, and good to see Evil Morty back. And I'm like, great, okay. I still enjoyed it. By the way, Rick and Morty, if you buy this show legitimately instead of pirating it, you pirate fucks. You have to wait till Monday to watch it.
Are you talking
about
me?
So don't talk about it.
Are you talking about me and how I pirate stuff?
No. No, I'm talking about the person who pirated the show so they can go on Facebook and fucking spoil it.
Okay.
But it's a minor thing. It's like you say, I mean, it's not the hardest thing
to see. I'm not saying I pirated it, but I did.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is I did the right thing and paid money to watch this show so it stays on the air for all you pirate fucks to watch. And then you fucked me with spoilers.
Thanks, Randy.
Anyway, I really like the show. But I did think what was interesting is that the stories are all pretty – I mean, this is the thing that Harmon does. The stories are all sort of riffs on other things. There's a Training Day riff. There's a Manchurian Candidate riff. There's a – or, you know, any kind of political thriller kind of riff. And then the other story about Simple Rick is sort of the man who has had too much and can't take anymore and takes on the system. They're all riffs on familiar tropes.
And then Stand By Me.
Stand By Me. That's how they get that. That's how they get this storytelling this efficient, though.
Because they use things we're familiar with as a baseline. It's great storytelling.
Don't have to show me the other hour of the movie. You only have to show me this 30 minutes of the political thriller, and I remember all the rest of it.
And it's gone beyond, like, those storylines are not just like you have to be familiar with Stand By Me to get it.
Yeah,
like it's playing into these familiar tropes.
Yeah,
and all those stories.
That reference at all. If you didn't know why he had black horn rim glasses, and
it's like a coming of age thing.
You exploration didn't need to get
kids.
The Stand By Me joke.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen Stranger Things. You get where they're going with those kids anyway.
Although I will say that is one of the issues of Rick and Morty is that you have to be somewhat plugged into tropes to really enjoy it. Like you can get it without knowing all these things. But the more pop culture knowledge you have, especially
it enriches
sci-fi and movie and TV tropes, the more you're going to enjoy the show. Because like Les said, they're using those as shortcuts to tell bigger stories in a 30-minute format.
Yeah,
which is it is really impressive.
They also do a great job of pulling back from their own mythology. The backstory stuff in the Citadel, they clip through so many of these stories so quick, and yet it works better for me than, say, stories about Springfield episode of The Simpsons. Like, that's kind of what they were trying to do, it felt like, of let's pan around the town and take an episode to show the life of the day, daily schmucks in Springfield or in the Citadel or wherever. And this didn't feel as, like, serialized chaptered. It all interwove in a really impressive feat of writing the plot of this episode.
Yeah, it's so steadily paced and has such a laser focus on what it's trying to achieve by the end. And the payoff is fantastic. Seeing that we have this unchecked Citadel as far as our main protagonist, Rick and Morty, our Rick and Morty of like C-137 or whatever it is, that they haven't been checking in on this. And as a result, we have Evil Morty taking power and none of the other Ricks seem competent to be able to either recognize or stop this.
Yeah.
And how this is going to drive the big bad of the plot is kind of fascinating, because I think it also, I mean, we've seen that they've built up our Rick as basically an untouchable god.
Like the Uber Rick.
Yeah. Yeah. He can put himself, he can make himself a pickle and then take down an entire mob and a corporation and destroy it as a pickle.
Yeah.
He's able to highly function.
He blew up the entire embassy as a pickle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever that was.
He can be kidnapped and he can trick someone else into programming code that will get him out of a system. Like, whatever. He's a super ultra god genius.
Well, I mean, at this point in the Citadel, like, all the Ricks are the same. I mean, all the Ricks are Rick. They all have the same IQ. So really the difference in them is drive and ambition and empathy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like, so kind of feely stuff. And basically, it looks like a Citadel where he's shot anybody of any ambition level or above, you know. If all the Ricks are smart, but this definitely looks like a Citadel where all your leadership management Ricks were culled. Like, there's nobody that's really putting together a big...
Well, I mean, Rick already did the damage of that. He took out the heads of the Citadel.
Yeah.
And as a result, those who did rise up to power, Evil Morty, was able to take them out and dominate the rest of
really
it.
These are really smart, small thinkers.
Yeah. And, I appreciate how they built up the story of that, but I also think it's interesting that we now have our Morty. They've been showing how Morty now understands his Rick. He's able to navigate the chaos that kind of Rick sows and hold his own against him. He's becoming smarter and more efficient, even though Rick treats him like shit.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the idiot that he once was.
Well, he's going to be the one who has to take out the Evil Morty.
Right?
Well,
it seems obvious that, like, an actual smart, competent
it's
Morty.
A Morty there was a great article, I think it was a BuzzFeed one, where it was like 10 things you didn't notice about Rick and Morty. I'm sure you've seen this kind of stuff, Grant. The one that was like, showed the toxic Rick using two universes to power their toxifier. Or there's a callback in Vindicators where Morty, like, Rick has set them up with that whatever the bomb is, the neutronium bomb or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, and Morty's like, okay, here's how you disarm it. And Rick's like, how do you know how to disarm it? He's like, I've disarmed too many of them, Rick. You've been drunk too many times. And then it's just, they've had all these adventures we haven't seen. And Morty is like, gotten a little pissed at his Rick, and he's a little burnt out on him. And he has learned things, like he knows how to disarm his bombs because Rick leaves him in these situations.
The Vindicators episode was a great, like, advancement of the Morty character and how he's able to just, like, he understands Rick now.
Well, they've been teaching Morty, they've been knocking the shine off of Morty's eyes, like, this whole season. The very first episode of this season has him, good thing you saw the note on the side of the gun about fake gun, shoot me. And Morty's like, yeah, good thing I saw that note. Didn't just try to shoot you for real.
Yep.
He's a lot more cynical.
In the end of the Vindicators one, when he thinks, oh my God, I'm the special thing that Rick prizes more. No, it's fucking noob. when Rick walk or when Morty walks back out of there, like, hey, how'd it go? No, I mean, talk to me. Just walked right back to the ship. Like Morty's definitely. Morty's going to come out of this, hopefully not dark. Like, I'm a little worried that, like, our Morty ends up being
like Evil Morty,
Evil Morty or something. Like that our Morty ends up broken.
Yeah.
I mean, they still have him tethered to a pretty noble, like, moral core.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't know. I mean, I almost wonder if, you know, they never touch time travel. But I wonder if there's sort of a familiarity of this system, this cycle that Rick has gone through with previous Mortys. Like, it's kind of been implied that this isn't his first Morty. Oh. And I wonder if he's seen, like, what kind of person he needs to be in order to groom the type of Morty that he needs.
Yeah, if, like, every once in a while an evil Morty comes up, like the third Matrix, and so Rick's got to keep the one Morty.
Yeah. Like, and it does seem like the one, you know, referencing that Jet Li movie, like, there might be that kind of situation with the evil Morty taking out all the other Mortys, too. Until we're left with two Mortys. And One doesn't have an eye patch to distinguish them anymore.
Same old story. Morty's killing Mortys.
I love this show, and I give them all the free passes they needed to take the time they needed to cultivate what they're doing for this season.
But if you can only have one show and Lord Garbanon was to destroy the world, you take this show over Game of Thrones.
It's a difficult choice, man.
It's not a difficult choice.
Not at all.
You would take this?
I agree with Les. It's not a difficult choice at all. I don't agree with his conclusions.
Les hasn't finished Game of Thrones.
And isn't gonna.
I don't know. This last season of Game of Thrones has me questioning things,
all
Randy.
Right, fair enough.
Jumping the dragon. All right. Let's go to the Orville. So this is Seth MacFarlane's comedic take on Star Trek, kind of a Galaxy Quest wannabe kind of thing, except for surprisingly less tongue-in-cheek than I thought it was going to be.
It's none of that. No. It is not Galaxy Quest.
That's how they presented it.
But that's the problem.
The marketing totally fucked this up. Because what this is, unless I think you basically put it perfectly when you were talking before, if someone came to you and you were the biggest Star Trek fan in the world, which granted, I know it's easier for you to imagine, if you love Star Trek Next Generation and Fox came to you, Seth MacFarlane, or you went to them and said, hi, will you give me a whole bunch of money to star in a Star Trek Next Generation? You would make that show.
Yeah, I can't take credit for that. Javier Grillo-Marx watched it. That was his whole take on it. It was like, oh, come on. If CBS just handed – or if Fox just handed you money to make your own Trek fanfic
– and you get to be the captain?
Fucking would.
Of course you would. And so – a lot of the hate seems to be directed because people don't like Seth MacFarlane.
I don't like Seth MacFarlane.
I don't much. Here's the thing. I don't dislike the dude. I don't know what he's done to earn such ire.
I just think he's not that funny anymore.
Yeah, he's cheap.
Because he takes other people's successful shows and then does his own version of them that's not as good.
Okay, that's fair.
Like the Simpsons
and Family Guy.
Family Guy. Yeah. This is a Star Trek ripoff.
He's just a ripoff guy. People have levied that charge at Tarantino, though, too. That all he does is remix old stuff.
What other stuff has MacFarlane done, though?
He did American Dad.
Oh, that's right. That was horrible.
Never seen it. The
Cleveland Show.
The Cleveland Show, which is just a spin-off Ted. Guy.
He did bring Cosmos, but I feel like that was a ripoff of another show called Cosmos.
Yes. Oh, no, that was actually the Cosby Show. It was a space version of the Cosby Show. Right?
Oh, is that what's going on?
I thought. I don't know. Maybe I misunderstood.
It was Cosmo Kramer.
Cosmo Kramer. So basically, it's the year is what, 2400?
Something like that.
And Ed Mercer, played by Seth MacFarlane, discovers his wife, played by Adrian Palicki, in bed with an alien. They skipped you a year later. He's sort of gone a little drinking.
Oh, Adrian Palicki's in this? So, of course, Randy loves this show.
Look, I am not going to say that I don't love Adrian Palicki because, of course, I do, and you all should. But that is not the only reason I liked it. It helped.
The main reason.
It helped a lot. If she wasn't in it, I might not be giving it more episodes. But the early reaction to this was so negative. Like, everyone was like, this is the worst thing on TV. It's awful. That I think I owe them all a debt of gratitude because they lowered my expectations to such a degree that I expect to hate this within minutes and not finish it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what drove so much hate. I found it a little bit boring.
It's not the greatest episode in the world, but it's better than several pilots
I've
seen.
It's a solid pilot. It's better than every Star Trek pilot.
It looked fantastic.
The CG in it is straight up fantastic.
The
ships look fucking amazing.
When I'm watching it early on, like when I'm a couple minutes in and I'm still expecting to hate the show, I was like, well, if nothing else, the production design is great.
Yeah.
But it looks fantastic.
The set that they're in for the main ship room is a complete ripoff.
For sure,
of Star Trek. But the back of the ship doesn't look like the Enterprise. It's got some swirlies.
I love their quantum drive, like the three-level quantum drive. That's a cool thing.
They did a couple of little tiny the CG's of a really nice quality, I thought. But one of the nice things they did, and really small, at the start of when he gets the Orville and he addresses his crew for the first time.
Yeah.
It's actually like 500 or 600 fucking people.
Yeah.
I need that more. Like it drives me nuts when we're on a starship and I see 10 people. That's it.
Right.
You just see the same 10 people.
You just see the command
and
crew.
That's it. Like, this ship is huge.
That's
and there's
a great
500
point.
Other people here. And so there's this massive crowd of people, and MacFarlane says, blah, 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 thank you all, and we serve honorably, and I'm glad to have you all here. And then he dismisses it. He says, everybody but senior crew or whatever.
The command crew,
Command crew dismissed. And all those other people go back to their jobs.
Yeah.
And really tiny, short scene, didn't have to do it. Paying those extras for that one scene paid forward for the rest of the episode.
So where you know they're there. Yeah.
There were people in the background, and I assumed there were 20 more out of frame.
Yeah.
The conceit that they really had to kind of work to push through that this guy and his ex-wife would somehow be able to be first in command and captain of the ship or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. It was kind of dumb, but it's obviously forced. they wanted to push that so that they have that dramatic tension.
Yeah. Yeah, but also because of that, Adrian Palicki is on the show, so I was wanting to forgive everything about that.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like there could have been a more interesting way of doing it than like they just couldn't fill that position with anyone else, and she said she would do it, and they'd be like, well, they have a history that's toxic, and are they oblivious to it?
The big reveal at the end of the episode is that that was bullshit.
Yeah, like
she got him the job.
Yeah.
She went to bat for
her ex-husband, she fucked over, and that's why, and they were like, okay, we'll give him a chance, but you have to be his first officer, and she's like, okay.
Yeah, but why would they do that? Why would they have her be his first officer?
Because they want her as first officer. They probably wanted her as captain.
She seems
She's the one they wanted. She's the judgment they trusted. I imagine what happened was she basically went to the admiral, who obviously is a family friend. They mentioned that and said, look, I do want to be first officer, but you've got to give my ex-husband a chance. He's a good commander. He's just had a rough year. Let's, you know, tell him whatever you want. Put him in charge. Make me his first officer. I'll keep an eye on him.
You know what I forgot about that end scene? It works a little bit better.
Yeah. See, that's really important.
It was still like through the rest of the episode, it's going, that's dumb. Wait, why? So yeah. They couldn't find anywhere else, and then they have to pick her up mid-flight through the mission. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, and the reason you pick her up mid-flight is, and I swear to God, I'm not just making excuses for bad writing here. I think I am, but the reason they pick her up mid-flight is because then he can't just refuse to get on the ship.
Yeah.
He's in mid-mission, so he can't – and he knows this is
the
only
chance. He has to see it through.
So if they had said, your ex-wife is your first officer, right to him, he'd been like, fuck you. I want to go on and drink himself, and that's it.
And they also – I mean, she had to make sure that they went on a mission that seemed initially like it was going to be a simple pickup cargo thing.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a simple mission.
But then it had to be one that she knew was going to be infiltrated by the Klingon equivalent, whatever these guys are.
Did she know that? I don't think she knew that.
No, I'm just making shit up. Yeah. I'm saying like at a certain point it starts falling apart again.
But see, that makes more sense. The notion that she said – put me on a mission with him. It'll be a milk run. He'll hate me, but you'll see that he's a good captain. And then she probably was going to transfer off the ship. Like, that was the plan. And that's the thing that happened, was that the mission was more problematic than they thought it was, and they found out they worked good together.
So there's a movie that I love that I realize is not a great classic comedy of all time, Down Periscope. With Kelsey Grammer.
Yep.
Oh, this is Down Periscope in space.
Rob Schneider.
Straight up Down Periscope in space. Yeah, with Rob Schneider as the XO. I can't think who it is that's the lady, the ship commander. They have a woman on the ship that's his love interest. Watching this show, about halfway through, it clicked of like, oh, yeah, okay. It's not total... Somebody in the questions nailed it. This show is the funny episode of a more lighthearted space thing, and I'm kind of good with that. I was telling Randy, I mean this in all the best ways. I used to love Justice League Antarctica and like all the screwball Justice League. DC Comics would do the teams of half power. You know, they have powers, but they're not Superman. And so you end up with like, well, that's where Squirrel Girl came from, like Great Lakes Avengers.
Yeah,
And they had Justice League Antarctica.
I mean,
this feels like that. Like, I'm fine to see the fuck ups of the Star Trek universe.
It's also it is Star Trek, but they're trying to deliberately do, and this is probably the biggest flaw of it. They're trying to do it's far in the future, but people are still people, so they still make dumb dick jokes when their captain and his ex-wife are talking. They all gossip about it, and yes, it's a little juvenile, but I believe this more than I believe the noble enlightened characters of the Star Trek universe.
Not as juvenile as I thought it would be from the commercials.
Me neither.
Based on them standing there, it's an anti-banana ray. Is it against all fruit? That pissed me off in the commercial where I was like, are they just going to be willfully stupid?
Yeah.
Where everyone else in the room stands there going, are you just going to refuse to understand this?
Yeah.
But instead, they have a character in that scene when I actually saw the episode, the next line from another character, not one of the two leads is, do you really not understand what you're looking at?
Yeah.
That is time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what was important in context about that was it was a brief glimmer of a bonding moment between him and his ex where they were both like joining in on some snark about something.
Whereas in the commercial, it was just pitched as like the funniest gag in the scene.
Yeah. And it was super annoying. And it was kind of annoying because I'd seen it already before. And it seems to be the type of dialogue that is Seth MacFarlane's like bread and butter. And sometimes it rubs me the wrong way.
It felt forced.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was overall pretty good with this. I feel like I want a little bit more drama and stakes in the show.
Yeah.
With like just tone wise, I don't want it to be as lighthearted as it is because it's in space and he's commanding a ship. I'm okay with them
leaning
a little bit more towards Star Trek, I guess.
I feel like that's kind of what they're doing and where they were getting in trouble is that they're leaning more into an earnest Star Trek than people expected.
Did not want it to be earnest Star Trek. People wanted it to be funny.
I don't want it to be Galaxy Quest. I don't want it to be this, like, if it stays this kind of like lighthearted tone,
that'll be a problem.
I'm not gonna be really that interested.
That'll be a problem
watching this week to week.
But getting done with the episode, and I sit back and went, okay, so ragtag band of Academy fuck ups gets a spaceship. What is wrong with this show that we didn't love on Firefly?
Yeah,
that we didn't love on, like, the setup of this show is not wrong.
Yeah, the setup
of the show is fine, and I really love the crew.
There's nothing wrong with the characters, the actors. Like I was going to say, like I love all of these characters. The super strong young alien race.
Her race doesn't join because they're super strong and they don't need our shit.
I thought that was a great little call. He's like, "Why are you here? If you're 23, why are you my security chief?" She's like, "Oh, my race doesn't join the military. So if one of us joins, they push us to the front." That made perfect sense to me.
Yeah, because she jumps away from a town.
I like the super serious Bortus, who's very much their Drax. I liked what they did with him. I like both the helmsman and the navigator.
Yeah.
And the relationship the two of them have. I like Penny Jensen Gerald from 24 is great as their sort of overqualified science officer. Like, I like this entire crew.
I like the way they handled the other thing besides the crowd of people that was small that I liked how they handled it. I've seen a lot of shows where the android robot views us all as meat sacks with weakness, where, you know, like, oh, if you humans didn't have your, you know, human fatal flaws, then, you know, if it were just all robots, we could get all this done. I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I love that they just shut that down immediately, where he looks up and goes, wow, I didn't expect to have your sentient robot race. None of you joined this thing. Aren't you legendarily racist?
Legendarily racist.
And the robot looks at him and like, do I view all organic life forms as lesser? Yes. And they just move on of like, but I for some reason it clicked that I don't think I've ever heard that just flat out presented as like, so the robot race is just really racist, right?
That's why I love that line. Legendarily racist. And actually Seth MacFarlane's delivery of it is pretty good.
And the robot is like, I love that they don't play it up every single time. Like every time a human says something, the robot doesn't go, I have to do it for you stupid meat sacks. Like they don't drive it into the ground for the rest of the episode, but he's a standoffish prick.
Yeah.
And you're all stupid.
So I think we need to watch the next episode.
I will
see
watch
this
more
goes.
Orville. I don't have a huge. I mean, Adrian Pilecki is hot and can act. I've liked her in almost every show she's been in. That said, I'm not watching this show for her. They could have just as easily put a woman that McFarlane's character had never met and made him the will they want they for the rest of the fucking season.
Sure.
There's enough happening on the show in a pilot episode that I will give it another two or three episodes.
You know, the other thing we didn't specifically talk about,
I like space shows.
And I think you and I chatted about this before we recorded, but that they fix the problem by thinking it through. Star Trek doesn't do that anymore. They do actiony things, and this was a solving a problem with a bit of science that we've established in the show. The gluing a seed onto the time thing, like that was a good solve.
I kind of dug how they solved that. Yeah, I got a kick out of the Arbor Day.
I feel like they murdered some people.
They kind of killed
They're
all the
aliens.
Krill on that
it's
fucking
cool.
ship.
The Krill are bad guys. You're allowed to murder them.
Like I'm also wondering, like I do appreciate that, but I'm wondering if we're gonna see. And maybe this just doesn't fit in the tone of the show, but if we're going to see the ramifications of that battle if lives were lost on the ship when it blew up.
I would love to see two or three episodes from now if they get pulled up on a whole lot of paperwork for the amount of
for
krill they killed.
A krill ship.
Because we were in the middle of a peace treaty and that's over now. Thanks.
But weren't, I mean, they well, got, I get the sense the krill was very much like evil, like terrorists.
I don't think they're going to
go
there.
I mean, like on their own ship. Oh. Like their ship got blown up. You just mentioned how they have like 500 crew. Mm-hmm. Part of the back of that like got blown apart.
Yeah. Some of those people are dead.
People died, right?
Yeah.
Is there paperwork? Is there accountability? Is there guilt? Like, that's okay
to
show. In this, yeah, like this was your first mission, and sure, shit went sideways, and you did a good job overall,
man.
But like, what does that do now when they put trust in a guy that they don't know?
That is my one concern going forward in this. Is Seth MacFarlane, and he's not the only writer or producer on this, but he has not shown a depth of thought that would indicate to me that he's going to answer these questions.
Yeah,
and I think as we go on, if it's just this lightweight forever. I'm not saying it'll be a bad show, but I do think it will lose my interest.
It has the potential to be a lot better.
But it has the potential to be a lot better, yeah.
Of course, now I'm wanting to see like a Horatio Hornblower in space, like the guts of the teeming guts of who has to keep a spaceship running and like how many people get killed randomly trying to work dilithium crystals.
Right, right.
And like people get... You know, people get press ganged in because you passed out in the wrong cantina. Like you wake up 5 parsecs into.
Yeah, like what's the psychology of working on a ship where you're inches away from certain death if you get pulled out into space?
See, this is an interesting show that I do not believe the Orville is going to be.
I know.
We're definitely not going to go into like that great Reddit thread of United Federation of Hold My Beer.
Right, but I think that. The reviews have done nobody any favors. I feel like everyone had the knives out, and they're looking for a show. And marketing nobody any favors. They're looking for a show. This show is not. But this show is not like the hot garbage everybody said it was.
Seriously,
it
didn't slap the
pilot.
Taste out of my mouth. Or anything. I mean, like this show is not the worst thing I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I really expected like an offensively painfully bad show.
Yeah, me too.
We watch a lot of bad.
Yeah.
Shows, a lot of bad network shows.
Mm-hmm.
This was solid.
Yeah,
this was like a good show that fits in our genre wheelhouse, and I'm happy to go check it out.
It could be a lot better.
Episode.
It's a pilot.
It could be better, yeah. But it's like I say, it's a better pilot than any of the Star Trek pilots. I am legitimately interested and kind of excited to see the second episode because I want to know what it's going to look like. Is it going to disappoint me immediately, or is it going to build on this? Because it could go either way.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
That said, Other Space is fucking awesome, and everybody should check it out. It's on Yahoo.
Yes, go check out Other Space. All right, guys, we're going to wrap things up there. Thanks, Les, and thank you, Brandy.
Thank you, Grant.
And thank you, listeners, so much. And this is episode 149. What are we doing for 150? Is there going to be a big to-do?
It's going to guest star the Hulk.
We're going to have a pizza party, and you guys can listen to us eat pizza.
That's a great idea.
I think it will be fun.
And I got to say that our questions from our listeners are great because I'm still thinking about the creature from It in the tubes in the Enterprise because the whole Losers Club would just be Wesley. He doesn't have any friends.
Oh, I think Barclay would be in there in that Losers Club.
I don't know. Wesley seems kind of friendless.
I think it's Wesley and Barclay and Guinan. I can put this together. Alexander for sure.
God.
You can definitely.
I hope they don't do the awkward sex scene from the book.
This is funny because I haven't seen It. I'm unfamiliar with it. I haven't seen Star Trek. I'm unfamiliar with it. I'm about to be on a Star Trek podcast, so no idea what you guys
There's
are talking
clowns,
about.
Grant. There's a lot of clowns at Star Trek.
Here's the thing you know about Star Trek and space, Grant. They all float out there.
Yes.
DVD's out. The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.